This episode is brought to you in part by Litvin School of Mission, Ministry, and Leadership at Wheaton College. Our graduate programs in evangelism, ministry, and leadership enrich your mind, spirit, vocation, and character to refine what's already within you. Learn more at wheaton.edu/CT.
You're listening to episode 150.
Joy.
Of the In-Between podcast, where you'll discover the tools to build a marriage and family that you love. My name is Daniel Lim.
And I'm Christina M.
That totally caught me off guard.
I know.
Joy. All right. So today we are going to have Chris Kersey and Marcus Werner back with us on the podcast.
Woohoo! Yeah. Their previous interview with us entitled How to Strengthen Your Marriage in 15 Minutes is actually one of our most downloaded episodes of all time.
Yeah. I mean, practical about marriages, 15 minutes, and then you throw brain science into the whole mix. Yeah.
That's a good one. So you be sure to check that one out if you haven't listened to it already.
Yeah. So this time we are going to be continuing to talk to them, not necessarily about how to strengthen your marriage, but four habits of raising joy-filled kids. This comes out of their newest book, really along the same sort of lines about brain science, mm-hmm. but implementing that now into the parenting side of things.
Exactly, of how to raise your kids to become happy, confident, and productive adults. We so appreciated their insight about the difference between healthy and toxic shame, especially since both of us grew up in a shame-based culture.
Mm-hmm. Marcus and Chris have spent years studying human relationships, and now they're offering principles derived from the way our brains are hardwired. You'll find on this episode that joy isn't some abstract concept, but rather a neurochemical reality that arises from the choices we make.
So let's listen in to learn how to make parenting decisions that bring joy to yourself and then to those young lives in your hands. We'll never regret investing into joy.
So as you listen into this episode, for all the show notes that we talk about and the links, just go to inbetween.org/episode150. Now let's listen in. Well, Marcus and Chris, it is so good to have y'all back on the In Between podcast. Welcome.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
We don't hear many Canadians say y'all. It's nice.
That's right.
Well, the Nashville, we have left Nashville, but Nashville hasn't left us.
That's it. Right?
Yeah, don't live in Nashville.
No, we're going to keep going as long as we can with the y'all.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly.
So much more inclusive than you guys. That's like
yeah.
Canadian,
that's right. You guys. Say you guys a lot.
Yeah.
So
yep.
Like, no, let's replace it with y'all. So just for our podcast family, so just so they know, once again, just the difference of your voice, can you just introduce yourself and say your name so they can kind of, because they won't be able to see us.
Yeah. Or change your, you know, intonation and your.
Yeah. Let's just mix it up.
One goes high, one goes low.
Yeah. I could try to become a bass really quick, but I don't know if that'll work. So this is Marcus. I'm Marcus Werner. And I'm the president of Deeper Walk International. And Chris?
Yes. I'm Chris Kersey, president of Thrive Today. So Marcus and I are good friends.
Awesome. Awesome. All right. So, you know, with your book, and once again, we'll link it to the show notes. The last time you guys were on the episode and we talked about your previous one, but you have a new book, The Four Habits of Raising Joy-Filled Kids. And you open up your book with these two unique statements, right? Families exist to grow joy, and that transforming low joy families into high joy families can change the world. This is the first time we've heard that the purpose of family and parenting is really to grow joy.
Yeah, I thought it was to raise adults and launch them.
But. Yeah, right?
Yeah.
No, completely. So can you unpack these thoughts for us?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, throughout history, people have thought the purpose of a family was to get well-behaved kids. Mm. They thought it was to get high-achieving kids. They thought it was to guarantee the future of their family, you know, dynasty or their family estate or something like this. What we find, though, is if you look at the purpose of the family as raising joy-filled kids who are resilient and can bounce back from almost whatever they face and not get emotionally overwhelmed, then you are raising mature kids, and all of those other things are going to happen. In other words, so if you focus on, let's raise joy-filled kids, The rest of that will follow. If you focus on those other things, too often what we do is we embitter our kids and we'd end up not getting what we wanted anyway because they're so upset with the way that we parented them. So we're not talking about spoiling them, giving them whatever they want. We'll talk about what it means to do this, but making joy the focus creates a lot of the other results we're after. But we've been focusing on the wrong things.
Yeah. And Marcus and I really hope that our book would kind of shine the spotlight on this, that joy means we're glad to be together. Mm. And we now have brain science that tells us joy is really the fuel for our brain. Mm. And the part of our brain that houses our identity, that thinks of who I am, who we are, that's also the part of the brain that grows throughout the lifespan. And it grows in response to glad to be together moments. So that means our brain is capable of growing this joy all throughout our life. And that is really good news.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, Marcus, do you mind defining something for us? Because you said the word resiliency. And even in my childhood, looking back, resiliency actually sort of had a little bit of a negative connotation to it, in the sense where it means you need to be resilient. You need to pick up yourself by your bootstraps. You need to white knuckle it through because you're strong. You're resilient. Yeah. Is that what you mean? Or is there a different definition to that?
Yeah, that's a great question, because what we mean by that is strictly in the strictest sense is the ability to recover from upsetting emotions. Now, okay, you can add negative things onto that. Like, you better recover from your negative emotions, right? You can, right, you can put negative things onto that. But at the heart of it is this idea that a lot of parents who were thought their focus was good behavior, for example, were actually very good at building joy-filled families. And they didn't even know how they were doing it. They just kind of had these skills that they had learned from their own families. They had high resiliency themselves. They didn't get so we're talking about is it takes a lot to overwhelm me, and it doesn't take much for me to bounce back. And that's what we mean by resilient.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And joy gives us that strength. So the more joy that we build, the more resilient I'm able to be, because I can recover when things go wrong. And it's actually, you know, I don't have to white knuckle it, because I can suffer well, even when things are just very painful, tiring, overwhelming. Yeah, joy really does kind of anchor us in the storms.
Yeah, that's good. So we recognize that all of our listeners, they're all at different levels of journeying with their children, or if they have children, and, you know, in terms of different parenting styles that they were parented via, you know, through, and that they've read and all this. And they might be, you know, on the treadmill or working out or driving, and they're hearing, okay, joy, joy, joy. Can you paint a picture of a family that's parenting in this way, lest our listeners think, okay, so should we just be like Ned Flanders? Like, is that what you're talking about? Just can you paint a picture for us and kind of dispel some of those myths.
Sure. So let me start. What this starts with is the first habit, and that's attuning to our kids. And the idea is noticing where they're at emotionally and meeting them in their emotions. So this starts by, like, if you walk in the room and the room's a mess and your child's over there, but they're upset or they're troubled by something, your first impulse isn't, what a mess, what's wrong with you, why are you doing this? And you go straight to the behavior and straight to the problem, instead of seeing the child, meeting the child where they're at, helping the child's emotions get settled and help them recover. Because 9 times out of 10, once the child's emotions get under control, they're going to be much more obedient. if you've helped them return to joy, now they are going to be much in a much better place to do what you ask them to do. It becomes less of a power struggle, because it also engenders trust, that they trust you to see them and not to just run over them because all you're concerned about are the problems and the behaviors.
Yeah. So we're actively molding character when we focus on joy, instead of just modifying behavior. So a lot of parenting strategies is modifying behavior, which actually reduces joy, because now I'm just focused on my behavior instead of the relationship. And so joy-filled parenting is when, you know what, things are hard, but I'm glad we're together in this. Mm-hmm. Joy is, it's a genuine response that I'm glad to be with you. And even when those moments happen where I'm not glad to be with you, we learn how to get back to joy. And we return, we learn how to return and recover from things that go wrong. And in that way, we don't have to avoid the hard stuff. Mm-hmm. We don't have to sidetrack it. We don't have to white knuckle it. Just means that our brain has learned to feel and to experience and to start some glad to be together joy. Just this morning, my sons were running late for school, and it was a rough morning. But in the midst of the rough morning, I could still convey to my sons, I'm glad we're in this together, that no matter what happens here, we're going to get through this. We'll look back on this, right, and it won't feel so big. Because in the moments, the hard stuff feels really big.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, and so joy is just, you know what? This is hard, but I'm glad we're in this together. I'm glad to be here with you.
Wow. That's, even just to hear those words just makes me feel so comforted.
Yeah. Where were y'all like 11 years ago when our eldest was one?
Yeah. Our eldest was like enjoying her time playing, and we were like, what a mess! Yeah. Oh, goodness. Well, yeah, thankfully
we're not saying
we're
this
all
is
on
easy.
A journey, right?
Yeah.
I appreciate that, Marcus. I really do.
That's right.
Exactly. But I love how even in your book you say time and time again, right, that this is a journey and that one moment does not just equal that you've ruined everything, that there are times to come back to joy and to come back and say, you know, hey, we are in this together. So another interesting thought that you had in your first chapter is that there's something to do with maturity, which was really interesting. And you said the lack of maturity, the low joy homes produce low maturity people. So what's the link between joy and maturity?
Do you want to start, Chris? You want me to take it?
Oh, go ahead.
All right. So the connection between maturity and joy, I think of sometimes like a balloon, and that is, or a ball that you bounce. And the air inside of that ball that allows it to bounce is joy. And so if we define maturity as the ability to act like myself under stress, I don't turn into a different person. You know how it is sometimes as parents, when I get really mad, I do things and I'm like, why did I do that? That's not like me. I turned into a different person. That's not how I want to parent, right? You know, so we find that for each of us, there are different emotions that trigger us to turn into somebody else. For some of us, it's shame. For some, it's fear. For some, it's anger, right? And so one of the things we do is we learn what emotion overwhelms us so that we turn into somebody else. At that point, I'm not being mature because I'm not acting like myself. So the air in the ball that allows me to bounce back from these emotions so that I can act like myself is joy. And so if I have a lot of joy in my life, it's harder to overwhelm me, right? And I can, okay, we'll deal with that. We'll get through that. Don't worry, you know, not that big. What makes it not that big is that it's well within my emotional capacity, right? This is not pushing me past my capacity. So how do you grow emotional capacity? Largely by the ability to live with joy and the ability to return to joy. And so joy is actually integral to the development of maturity.
And that's where, as parents, it's really helpful to have other parents that we can connect with, that we can hear their stories. You know, I like to find parents like, you know, it's me with Marcus. Marcus has raised his children longer. His children are older. So I have the benefit of hearing these stories that Marcus has on his parenting journey that give me hope when I'm in a rough spot. I can say, Marcus, how did you and Brenda handle this? And so hearing those stories, as well as just being glad to be together, having this relational joy, that really helps us as parents, because the moment we feel alone in our pain or our problems, the hard stuff becomes bigger and louder. And so I really encourage parents to go through this book, to go through the material together with other parents so you can share those stories, build some joy, and just have that mutual understanding of, yeah, you know what, parenting is hard, but let's look at what we've learned. And let's pass that on to give hope to other parents.
Yeah. You know, I know there's so many of our podcast family that are like, oh, can you talk more about that? Can you keep going? And once again, their book is The Four Habits of Raising Joy-Filled Kids, a simple model for developing your child's maturity at every stage. So we do want to encourage you, podcast family, to pick up a copy of this to dig deeper, right? I mean, we're literally just scratching the surface on this. All right, so this is a little bit more of a personal question, where for both Christina and I, and we're all affected, like every human is affected in different ways through shame and guilt and in different levels in culture, in their culture, right? But for both Christina and I, being Asian, Canadian, Asian American, like we grew up in a shame-based culture, and it's like, it is so deep in us,
it's
that
ingrained.
It just, it's like we have to fight against out it. In yes. our marriage, in our parenting, in our everything, because it's just, and we're in our own journey of understanding shame in a deeper way and how we've been affected by it and how it then comes out. But it was fascinating that you guys talk about the difference between toxic shame and healthy shame. And our popular culture's understanding of shame doesn't have those two dimensions. Like it is here is the shame. Right? Like guilt is you've made the mistake. Shame is you are the mistake. And that's literally, right? Like that is our culture's understanding of this. So to even put these adjectives of toxic and healthy in and around the shame might even cause some of our listeners to be like, whoa. What are you talking about?
You're poking the bear yeah. there.
can you tease out the difference? Because, you know, we all thought shame was bad.
Well, I can answer this, you know, I'll answer this in a minute, but, you know, in a sarcastic way, you sort of, sometimes we think of toxic shame as, you know, I'll just go straight to the science.
This is great. Yeah, keep going. You
know, science is on the right side of the brain, right? When I'm on the right side of the brain, when I am first feel shame. Shame is that impulse that makes me want to hang my head, right? It literally triggers, the vagus nerve? Chris, is that what
yeah.
it is? It triggers the vagus nerve back here. It makes you want to hang your head and go, oh, I've made you unhappy. Right. That is a natural reaction. It's an involuntary reaction. There's nothing toxic about it. You can't help the fact that it happens. In fact, the Bible has a word for people who don't do that. They're stiff-necked. Right.
Whoa.
I am not going to feel shame. There is nothing you can do that's going to make me feel shame. I am never going to bow my head. Right. Wow. Whereas what God wants are people who go, oh, shouldn't have done that. Right. That was, I'm sorry, I hurt you. I did something that was harmful. That's that healthy shame. Where shame becomes toxic is when the left brain gets a hold of it and attaches a narrative to it. And this can happen, obviously, in less than a second in our brain, right? It can happen so fast that we just think we're having a single experience. But the narrative part of it is now explains to me why I'm feeling shame. And that is, I'm feeling shame because I'm a horrible person. I'm a terrible human being and I hate me and I don't blame everybody else for hating me and all that. That's the narrative that is being spun around what I just felt. But what I felt was an involuntary reaction. So I'm not a bad person for feeling that. And I'm not, you know, it's not a, and the reality is I'm never going to, it's a healthy thing at some levels to be able to go, oh man, I hurt you. I did the wrong thing. I'm so sorry. How can we make this better? And it's designed by God to help us want to fix something to make relationships better.
Yeah. So what Marcus is saying is really important here, because healthy shame is where my spouse can come up to me and say, honey, you were a little too intense with the sons. Did you see that, you know, they were overwhelmed by that? So healthy shame would go, oh, wow, I didn't realize that. I need to fix that. I need to repair it. I need to restore joy here because I really dropped the ball, forgot who I was for this moment. So healthy shame means I can correct some unwanted behaviors. Toxic shame would be just, honey, you're such a fool. You know what? You can't do anything right. You yelled at the kids again. You're just such an idiot. Like, you know, toxic shame is like there's no redemptive value. You're saying there's something wrong with my identity. There's just nothing I can do with that. And so if I don't learn to recover from healthy shame, then what happens is I use shame to motivate you. So I use shame to get things done. I use shame to change you in some way to be who I think you need to be. And that's where these generational patterns come in. Because children then never learn to tease out, there is a healthy shame that Marcus is talking about, which is corrective and helpful. But then there's this toxic shame that's not helpful or corrective. And so now if my brain doesn't learn how to deal with healthy shame, then I can use toxic shame against the people in my life, whether I'm a boss, a leader, or my family. And now I shame you when you're not doing what I think you need to be doing. And at that point, it's just toxic. There's nothing redemptive about it. So Marcus and I really wanted to tease this out in our book because, you know, when children learn to process and return to joy from healthy shame, they bounce back. So I can correct it. Oh, I was being mean. I was bullying at school. Healthy shame says, okay, that's bad. I need to correct that. I need to apologize and, you know, restore joy. Whereas toxic shame would just kind of blast you. And then you're sitting feeling alone in that nasty shame. So it really is a fascinating discussion to even present the concept that there is a healthy shame, even if that doesn't match my experience.
Exactly.
It just shows how in our world, some of these skills have just really faded from society. So even culture can't imagine there's any healthy shame. It's just all bad. And just because our families and our communities don't have some of these important skills.
And if I could jump in, this is partly where we get back to the idea of changing the world, right? Mm-hmm. That if you can change these patterns in families, families are the core of culture. And so if you can change enough families, then it changes the culture and you change the world. And that's why we said that at the beginning.
Like a domino effect. That's fascinating. Yeah.
The wait is over. Find out what happens in the thrilling conclusion of the 12th Dead Sea Squirrels book, Babylon Breakout. Hi, I'm Mike Naraki, co-creator of VeggieTales, voice of Larry the Cucumber, and author of The Dead Sea Squirrels. Get ready for more daring rescues and hilarious jokes as Merle and Pearl and their animal friends embark on a ridiculous mission to bust the kidnapped Gomez family out of Babylon, a Bible-themed amusement park with talking animals. Young readers will love the nutty misadventures of 10-year-old Michael and his friends and will learn all about biblical life lessons such as forgiveness and friendship. Read all 12 Dead Sea Squirrels books, available wherever books are sold.
So I feel like we understand the difference between the healthy shame and the toxic shame. What I'm wondering, podcast family, I hope you find this interesting as well. I feel like I'm just getting a counseling session here.
Yes, I know. This is great.
But
can we do this every month?
Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly. How do you restore joy when you've realized you've toxically shamed your kids? Because goodness gracious, I mean, we're going to be very vulnerable and honest here. That's our instinct.
Yes.
To go to toxic shame, and it does work. Mm-hmm. I mean, there are consequences to it, right? We are living that proof that there's patterns in our life where we've really had to bring before God. Let's say you just realized you totally toxically shamed your kids and you are just feeling, oh, that was gross. I shouldn't have done that. But how do I restore joy? How do I repair the relationship from there?
Well, this is actually where we get to the second habit, right? That building bounce habit. Mm-hmm. And part of what we mean by building bounce is bouncing back, right? Mm-hmm. How do we bounce back from these things? And so, again, you start by seeing what that did to your child and attuning to that, going, how are you feeling right now? What did that just do to you? And you're beginning to try to tease that out where you can connect to them at the emotion of what they have experienced and going, that's really not what I'm after here. I do not want to have that kind of relationship with you. I want us to have a different kind of relationship with you. And then you apologize. I'm sorry that I led that way. I should have done this. Right. And so there are times as parents where we apologize to our kids for the way that we have handled things. And this is where it comes down to keeping relationship bigger than the problem.
Okay.
And so when we talk to our kids, we want to lead with relationship, then talk about the problem and end with relationship. So it's a very important pattern. You know, if I begin with attunement, I see where you're at, you know, help me understand your emotions, where you're at, meet them there. I said, now let's talk about correction. Now let's talk about what needs to change here. And let's end with, you know, the reason for this correction is that I love you. I want us to have a good relationship. I want this to move forward. So it's not that you skip correction. It's not that you skip the behavior. It's that you sandwich it between relationship, you know, in a, like a relational bread. And that way it helps you to avoid, you know, what most parents do is if I just want change, I just want the kid to do something different, I'm going to motivate with anger, fear, or shame. Those are the big three, right? And it does work because kids are afraid of you, you know? And so, but what you're ending up doing is you're building a fear bond with your kid instead of a joy bond with your child. And so that's what we're after is how can we change that approach so that we end up with a kind of relationship with our kids where they, you know, want to call us and talk to us about stuff as they get older and we have a good relationship.
Yeah. And the big thing that Marcus is saying here is that we're staying relational with our children. We're owning it. What I find is helpful with my sons is I share stories like, wow, you know, daddy didn't learn some of these important skills that you guys are learning. In fact, what I learned is A, B, and C. And so I share these stories to give some context, but they're not, I don't justify the behavior. And that's very important.
Oh, that's big. Yeah.
So I would repair and say, you know what? I realize that wasn't helpful what daddy just did. Now my kids are young enough. I still can talk like that, you know, but obviously if your kids are older, you know,
my daughter's 30, that doesn't work
yeah.
so much.
Yeah. yeah. That wouldn't work
to talk to you.
Yeah. yeah. But I would use the, you know, the language that makes sense to them, take ownership over it. I messed up. I'm really sorry. Will you forgive me? And I don't justify it. Like, well, justifying would be, well, if you would have listened when I told you the first time, I wouldn't have had to be so intense the second time. But, yeah. you know, we don't justify. We just own it and apologize for it, ask for forgiveness. So we're learning to return to joy. And what happens is that helps your children interpret those moments where you do, because we do use toxic shame in our parenting. And it's like, we don't even realize it half the time. So when we're repairing, it's actually teaching our brain to find a new way and don't keep going down that old road.
Right.
And it's helping our children interpret it and go, oh, wow, this isn't really who mommy is, or this really isn't who daddy is. They had a moment where they forgot who they were. And so finding ways to do that actually is incredibly redemptive, because if our families or communities would have done that with us, it would have changed a generation. So we can be the instruments of change for our children and our grandchildren.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. You know, before we get to our last question, where we would love for you to just give us some examples in and around the four habits, Marcus, you mentioned this just practical example of, okay, there's this attunement and then there's the, in a sense, correction. And then there's that relational connection afterwards. The thing that came to my mind as you were talking about that was just that question of timing, right? Is this all within 5 minutes? Is this all, like, what is the time in between? And if you could just use this example, for example, your child comes home, they bring home the result of a test that they did, and it is like, is not good, right? And they knew the results, and they're bringing it home, and they're, you know, they probably have all these flutter emotions. I mean, I remember those moments. I'm walking home with the bad test results.
Couldn't even bring home a B. Like, what did you talk about?
Exactly. So as a parent, how do you do those three? Like, what's the timing in between, if you could use that example?
No, that's a good question. My, I tell people there's a time to skip the relational thing first and go straight to the problem. And it's called a crisis, right? If your kid's about to step in front of a bus, you didn't go, how do you feel about this?
Oh my goodness.
Right? So what happens is the more often that we lead with anger and lead with fear and lead with shame, we are turning more things into a crisis.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So when I, on the timing on this, it also, that is partly going to depend on how practiced you all are on doing it. In other words, if this has been your habit of how you parent your child, you both fall right into that pattern very quickly, and you can get through that process relatively quickly. If you've never done this before, right? Mm-hmm. That could be a somewhat long, drawn out process while they try to figure out what in the world is happening here. So the timing and speed of it has a lot to do with just how normal of a routine this is for the way that we communicate, yeah. which is why okay. we talk about it as habits. So my tendency, like, this has happened. I've had, one of my kids bring home pretty bad report cards. And I'm like, and my first question is almost always, how do you feel about this? Mm. I'm like, mm-hmm. so what, what's going on here? How's it happening? Part of what I want to try to do is get them to not self-justify and not okay. cast blame and take ownership. Right. Because I've got a bigger goal here than just you better get grades. And that is I want their character to develop in a way that they take ownership when they've messed yeah. up. And then we'll come yeah. up with a plan of what they're going to do about it. What are we going to do from here? You need to go talk to your teachers. We need to go find out if there's anything you can do. Because they're like, oh, I missed this by 2 points. I missed that. And I said, did you talk to them? No. I was like, OK, let's go. Mm-hmm. So we're going to deal with it. And we're going to try to deal with it constructively. And then I'm going to end with, I'm in this with you, but we got to get this straightened out. And there's parts of this that only you can do. So that conversation honestly took half an hour.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And in that example, what Marcus conveyed with his child is that I'm with you in this. You're not alone. And so as far as how the brain works, that's one of the best ingredients he could add to that equation with his child, even though, the child's got some work to do mm-hmm. and the child's going to learn from this. But he's saying, I'm with you here. You can do this. I believe in you. And that's that character that says, no matter what happens at the end of the day, I'm going to get through this. It's going to be okay. And just putting that security in place with our children and our families is so life-giving.
Yeah. Okay. Okay. That's great. Awesome. Thank you for coloring that in for me. So as we close, as we kind of come to the end of our podcast, we'd love for you to tell us, with the four habits of raising joy-filled kids, if you could just share a bit about the habits and give us a practical example of what each habit looks like for both babies and children.
Sure. So the four habits you can think of as two primarily relational and two primarily task. And they go A, B, C, D. So it's attune and build bounds. And attune just means see them where they are, the emotion they're actually feeling, and meet them in the emotion they're actually feeling. And then build bounce refers both to things that we initially do just to help them grow joy, and then things that we do to help them bounce back and recover their joy. Mm-hmm. And so we talk about joy workouts with babies, like peekaboo. Oh, peekaboo. Oh, yeah. You're playing with them. And what you're doing when you're playing peekaboo is you are joy building, and mm-hmm. they'll engage with it. And then you'll notice that babies at some point will just look away mm-hmm. I'm done. Now, that means they need a break. It means their brain has experienced as much joy as it can handle. It's time for a break. And if you push on past that, it's a little bit like tickling somebody too much, right? It stops being fun and it becomes like an abusive, right? So part of what we're doing when we attune and build joy with our babies is we are helping them build joy, but we are paying attention that we're doing it on their schedule.
Okay. Yeah. And an example of that would be just the other night, one of my sons was very upset and sad because he didn't get his way. And so one of the ways my wife and I attuned was just basically, looking at his body language, listening to his words and his voice mm-hmm. and seeing, wow, you're really sad right now, aren't you? Mm-hmm. I can see you're really sad because you didn't get what you wanted. What do you need right now? What would be helpful? Do you need some space? Would you like us to sit with you? Or do you just want to be alone for a few minutes? Mm-hmm. So, we attuned. We didn't try to just focus on the problem or the behavior and like snap out of it already. Right. It's like, oh, no, I see you're upset, right? So the attuning is I'm actually sharing it with you. And the building balance then is going to say, hey, what would be helpful to find some joy right now? One of my children, they just love like humor. So they love to be funny and silly. And when they're having a tough time, it actually helps them, start to smile and giggle and get some joy going. My other child completely annoyed by that approach. So would only make the problem worse. And so one of the things I might do is just share a story. Would you like to hear about a time I was feeling really sad and how dad got back from that really big upset? So we are, you know, we're joining them in their upset. We're sharing it with them. And again, they still need to do whatever it is that they're going to have to do, but we're actually helping to give them the resources in that moment to get relational and to be that, remember who they are, even while they have to navigate that terrain. So we're joining them and helping them. And over time, this all becomes habits. And so they don't have to be upset for as long. They bounce back, as Marcus was saying.
So that's A and B kind of lumped together, and then we go to C and D, and C is correction. How do you handle correction? And the main point we're making here is that you have to correct, and you have to correct kids, or they're going to ruin their lives because, you know, let's face it, children are natural born fools. You know, and this is really clear to me when I came home one time after my wife and I had been on a date. We had a babysitter to find our infant son in his diapers crawling up the stairs with a butcher knife in his hand, right? Giggling for all he was worth, thinking this was the greatest thing ever. I'm like, my first thought, you know, being a pastor, my first thought was sermon illustration. No, I'm like,
yeah, everything's a sermon illustration.
Yeah, everything's a sermon illustration. No, I'm sitting here going, you know, it's like, this is the classic definition of a fool. It's somebody who thinks this is the greatest thing ever, but it's actually leading to disaster.
Wow.
Right. So now how I handle that with an infant is totally different than how I'd handle that with a child, right? With an infant, it's like, I just want to keep them safe, get rid of the situation, help them get back to joy. There is no correction involved. I am not going to try to teach them a life lesson. I'm not doing anything with my baby, but keeping them safe, you know, helping them get back to joy. And move on. With my child, then it would be different. It would be, okay, now we're going to sit down and we're going to talk about why I'm correcting your behavior. Yeah, I can't correct your behavior because I love you, because I want you to be successful. I want you to have a long life. I want you to have a lot, you know, I want you to achieve a lot. I want you to have a lot of friends. You know, I'm casting a vision for them as to why correction is essential, because the path you're on right now will not lead to that destination. So let me help you get on a better path. So we start with attunement, we do the correction, we end with the relationship.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. The last one is developing disciplines relationally. And it's also the difference between saying, go out and do your chores, which you do that after you have relationally established how to do them well. Because what I found is like, if let's just say that, you know, you and your kid dusted the house together every Saturday morning, you know, for 4 years. Well, then at some point you can say, you go dust the house without me. And while they're doing it, half the time they're thinking about you. It has become a relational experience because they're having memories of when I used to do this with my mom or my dad. Right. And so by building the discipline relationally, what you're doing is you're expanding their world, because every new discipline a child learns expands their world. If they learn the discipline of piano, the discipline of gardening, the discipline of, you know, whatever it is that they're doing, all of those make their world bigger and advances the cause of saying, I want you to learn to live with joy. I want you to live your life out of joy and adventure and not out of fear. And how do I keep myself from ever experiencing pain? And those are the core tension that we find in parenting.
Yeah. And you see Marcus is staying relational with his children while he does that. So even correcting, if my son's playing with a toy instead of cleaning his room, I see your toy is really important, isn't it? I see you're enjoying that toy. So I see you. But what are you supposed to be doing right now? Right? Yeah. So I'm remembering who I am in the moment. I'm staying relational. Here's what I'm seeing. Obviously, that toy is really important to you. But what should you be doing? So he still has to clean his room.
Right.
And, you know, and there's probably going to be consequences we'll talk about later, but not in the moment. He has a job to do, and let him do his job, but I'm being relational with him. When we get kind of non-relational, we just focus on the problem, and there's not going to be a whole lot of joy in the household for quite a while after that.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Wow. This is hitting me close to the heart here. I'm really good at pointing out what our kids should be doing.
Yeah.
It's easy.
But to start with the I see, right? And the attunement and the relational. I mean, that is huge. Yeah.
Yep. Very, very true. We got some some joy to continue to instill in our children. Yeah. Oh, well, Chris and Marcus, thank you so much for joining us and just for sharing your heart and your examples and your wisdom with us. Podcast family, their newest book, The 4 Habits of Raising Joy-Filled Kids. You need to pick this up, especially I mean, we said it time and time again. It's never too late, but even if you're a younger parent, maybe this would be really setting you up for just a different kind of parenting maybe than you were parented. And also a point we didn't touch on just due to time is we talked about the 4 habits of raising joy-filled kids. They went through the babies and children, but there's also ones for adults. And so that would be if you have, you know, a child that's you're ready to launch into adulthood and you're wondering what your relationship will look like then, this is a great book to pick up too. So thank you so much, Chris and Marcus. As we ask in our final question, where can our podcast family continue to connect with you and find out more about you?
Why don't you go ahead, Chris?
My ministry is just thrivetoday.org. You can learn more about what my wife Jen and I do at thrivetoday.org. And Marcus, what about you?
Yeah, and Chris's whole ministry is on relational skills training. So you're going to find tons of parenting and marriage resources there. My ministry is more on discipleship. And then we occasionally do the parenting and marriage stuff, but it's deeperwalkinternational.org.
Perfect. Well, thank you so much, Chris and Marcus. All right. Well, we told you this was going to be good. And if you liked this episode, definitely go and pick up a copy of their book. But if you haven't listened to our other episode with them, How to Strengthen Your Marriage in 15 Minutes, then just go to inbetween.org/episode150 to find the link for that. And we'd also be honored if you'd share this episode with someone that came to mind, perhaps your spouse or a friend or others that you are in this parenting journey with that you can encourage one another with and possibly have a discussion on this topic. You can just hit the share button on your favorite podcasting app or send them that link inbetween.org/episode150.
We'll catch you next time.